So again, welcome all of our guests. We have a few today. It's very nice to see them here. I'm not going to chant around them out of it just because we had such kind of long but very ecstatic announcements for the sake of time. So we're going to talk about the Bhagavad Gita. Most of you are familiar with it. We are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, and this is the translation and commentaries by our spiritual masters, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And today we are going to read a verse from chapter 5, text 9. Wait a minute, let me see. I may be wrong. I'm sorry, text 7, Bhagavad Gita. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Let's see. Oh, what's up? Good. Okay, I'll chant it and then you can just repeat. We'll do it a couple times. Yoga yukto vishuddhatma. Jitatatma jitendriya. Sarva bhutatma bhutatma. Purvanapi nalipyate. Yoga yukto vishuddhatma. Vijitatma jitendriya. Sarva bhutatma bhutatma. Purvanapi nalipyate. So, translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. Report. One who is on the path of liberation by Krishna consciousness is very dear to every living being, and every living being is dear to him. This is due to his Krishna consciousness. Such a person cannot think of any living being as being separate from Krishna, just as the leaves and branches of a tree are not separate from the tree. He knows very well that by pouring water on the root of the tree, the water will be distributed to all the leaves and branches, or by supplying food to the stomach, the energy is automatically distributed throughout the body. Because one who works in Krishna consciousness is servant to all, he is very dear to everyone. And because everyone is satisfied by his work, he is pure in consciousness. Because he is pure in consciousness, his mind is completely controlled. And because his mind is controlled, his senses are also controlled. Because his mind is always fixed on Krishna, there's no chance of being deviated from Krishna. Nor is there a chance that he will engage his senses in matters other than the service of the Lord. He does not like to hear anything except topics relating to Krishna. He does not like to eat anything which is not offered to Krishna. And he does not wish to go anywhere if Krishna is not involved. Therefore, his senses are controlled. A man of controlled senses cannot be offensive to anyone. Now, one may ask, why then was Arjuna offensive in battle to others? Wasn't he in Krishna consciousness? Arjuna was only superficially offensive because, as has already been explained in the second chapter, all the assembled persons on the battlefield would continue to live individually as the soul cannot be slain. So spiritually, no one was killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Only their dresses were changed by the order of Krishna, who was personally present. Therefore, Arjuna, while fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, was not really fighting at all. He was simply carrying out the orders of Krishna in full Krishna consciousness. Such a person is never entangled in the reactions of work. Translation once more. One who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. Omagyanatamarandasha, Gnanjana Salakaya, Shakshulunitanima Tasmai Sri Gurve Namaha. Panchakalpa Tubhischa, Kripa Sindhu Bebacha, Patitano Pavanibhyo, Vaishnavi Namaha. If I could get some water, it'd be helpful. Thank you. So this verse, Bhagavad Gita 5.7, talks about and gives a description of the Vishuddha Atma. Vishuddha Atma means purified soul. So what are the characteristics of the purified soul? Srila Prabhupada says in his purport that he is very dear to everyone, and every living being is dear to him. So this is a very, very wonderful description that I really appreciated reading, because this is the quality of the devotee. This is the characteristic of the devotee, and what makes one who is a servant of God a very special person, a very different person, one with unique characteristics in this world. I was just thinking about, I definitely do not want to talk about politics. I couldn't help but note how this description of the great soul is quite different. It's quite a contrast to much of our political current climate, where contempt and hatred, you know, is openly expressed. You know, where there's, you know, so much rancor, so much you know, negativity, almost appeal to people and to groups based upon people's fear, based upon you know, people's contempt or other expressions that they might have towards every living entities. Now, this is natural in the material world. This would be typical of many materialistic people, many of our many leaders. Of course, there's different degrees, different experiences of this. But the idea is that this is not spiritual quality. This is not what a spiritual leader is like. This is not the quality of a spiritual personality. In about a little bit later in this chapter, in Bhagavad Gita 5.29, Krishna is described, of course, the three very, very important qualities that Prabhupada says, the peace formula, right? That Krishna is the supreme controller, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, but also Krishna is Suhridam Sarvabhutana, right? That Krishna is the well-wisher of all living beings. God loves all creatures in this world, all living entities, human beings, plants, animals, microbes, everyone, because the pure spirit soul is within every living entity. So Krishna, although people appear to be suffering this material world, it is not by Krishna's desire that they suffer, because Krishna is always that well-wisher of everyone. So in the same way, we are jiva, we are living entities, we are spiritual nature, and we all have similar qualities to Krishna, but in minute degrees. Prabhupada gives an example of the ocean and a drop of water or a palm full of water. If I take a palm of water out of the Atlantic Ocean and I examine the quality of that water, the chemical composition, the salinity and everything, you would see that it's pretty much the same as the whole ocean. But can I say I have the ocean in my hand? Of course not. Be foolish. And that is the position of living entity. We have similar qualities of God, of Krishna. We are Satchitananda. We are full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, and spiritual form. But while Krishna is very great, and he is the complete whole, we are very, very tiny, very, very small in comparison. But because we do have those qualities of Krishna, we also possess those very, very wonderful qualities, at least in our purified state, such as being the well-wisher of all living entities. So just as Krishna is everyone's friend, one who has fully realized one's spiritual identity is also the friend to every living entity. In fact, this is described many places throughout the scriptures. A little later in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the godly qualities or divine qualities are mentioned. And one of those is Daya Bhuteshu, that the devotee, the spiritually minded personality, has mercy towards all living beings. So these are the qualities that we see in the purified souls who are serving Krishna. There's another also very interesting, important term that we often hear that Prabhupada quoted many, many times. We said a Vaishnava, a devotee of God, is described as paradukha-dukhi. And Prabhupada said this in his purport, 4647, Bhagavatam, because although he is never distressed in any condition of life, he is distressed to see others in a distressed condition. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada was talking about how the devotee is completely, his mind is controlled, his senses is controlled, he's never deviated, so he's very equipoised. You know, the devotee does not experience distress in the same way that the materialistic person experiences distress, because that distress comes from identification with the body and the mind, the gross and the subtle bodies. When one breaks that identification with the gross and subtle bodies, and one understands one's pure spiritual nature, then there's no real distress, because the soul is not distressed. The soul is blissful. The soul does not experience the pains and pleasures of this material world that are experienced by the body, the senses, and the mind. So, the devotee is not distressed by any condition of life, but he is distressed by seeing the distress of others. And so we have so many examples of this, Prahlad Maharaj and others, who had this quality of compassion. Even though the devotee may not feel distress, he experiences, he sees the distress of others. And through that natural compassion that is part of our nature, our pure nature as souls, then we naturally feel something for that suffering that others are experiencing. So there's really two parts to that compassion. One is to understand the suffering of others. One has to be a little bit observant. One has to be able to see outside one's own self. One has to have some quality of empathy, some ability to see how others are experiencing life, how others may be happy or distressed, and understand that. And we see many people have that feeling. Many people experience that they're able to have some empathy for others. But beyond that, the second part is, after understanding the distress of others, one needs to have that desire to relieve the suffering of others. Not just that I experience it, but I want to do something about it. That's actual compassion. And I guess the third part, we could say spiritual compassion, is actually knowing the process and the way to relieve the suffering of the living entities. Not through material means, not by a new economic plan or, you know, this or that or some new legislation, but by helping people to realize their spiritual nature where there is no distress. That's the compassion of the devotee. And of course, this was exemplified, as I said, one very vivid example in the Srimad Bhagavatam is Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj said to Lord Nrisingadev, how it's interesting, of course, Lord Nrisingadev asked Prahlad Maharaj for a boon. You're my great devotee, let me give you something. He says, I don't want anything. I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm satisfied. He said, I'm not like a merchant. I'll serve you if you give me something. He said, that's bargaining. That's material. I don't need anything. But then Lord Nrisingadev pushes him a little further. And he mentions two things. First, he says, well, all right, since you insist, my father, Hiranyakasipu, was a great demon. And most of you know the story, but if you don't, Hiranyakasipu actually tortured his son because his son was a great devotee, and Hiranyakasipu was the king of the atheists, who hated anything to do with God or spirituality. He actually tried to kill his young son, who was a great devotee of the Lord. And he was not successful, of course, and Lord Nrisingadev came and saved him. So after that, he said, all right, if you want me to ask you for some favor, my dear Lord, then please, please forgive my father. Please accept my father, purify my father, bring him back to you. Forgive his sinful activities. This is the nature of compassion. To want forgiveness, to ask God to forgive one who has tortured and tried to kill you in so many ways. So Prahlad Maharaj is an incredible example. I was reading some of the verses around that place in the Bhagavatam, the seventh canto, and I note in one part, Srila Prabhupada mentioned of the 12 Mahajans, he says, Prabhupada said, Prahlad Maharaj is the greatest example of all the Mahajans, of the 12 greatest authorities in spiritual life. He said, Prahlad Maharaj is our example. He's our exemplar of a devotee, of bhakti. because he had this unswerving devotion and faith to God, and combined with this incredible compassion that he had for all living entities, wanting all living entities to experience this love for God that he experienced. So, the devotee is servant to all. As I mentioned in the purport, that one of the ways that the devotee is dear to everyone is that he's the servant to everyone. The devotee doesn't consider, oh, I'm very advanced in spiritual life. I'm very great. And look at all these other people. They're like useless, or they're nonsense. Or, no. The devotee does not think that way. The devotee thinks, I am a servant. I'm a servant of God. These are all God's part and parcels. These are all God's sons and daughters. I'm servant of God. I'm servant of them. And that's the attitude. Srila Prabhupada, our founder, Acharya, our beloved guru, spiritual master, once said, I think it was during the appearance day of his guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, he was talking to his disciples, and I'll say we, I wasn't there, but you know, of course, but you know, those of us who were in that era 40 years ago, young Americans, knew nothing about spiritual life, had never heard of Krishna until a couple years before, until we read Srila Prabhupada's books. We knew nothing. Who were we? And Srila Prabhupada so much thanked his disciples. He said, I think you are representative of my Guru Maharaj. He said, I want to thank you so much for coming and to helping me with this mission. Of course, we're thinking, we're just so grateful to everything Srila Prabhupada has done, coming and helping us, giving us spiritual life, actually giving us real life. But Srila Prabhupada's mood was, you know, I am servant, I am your servant. He actually, in his heart, thought that, of course, the spiritual master has to act as a superior. But Srila Prabhupada's internal mood was, my service to Krishna is to teach these young people about Krishna. So in that way, he actually considered himself servant. I mean, it's just an amazing internal consciousness that the pure devotee has. So this is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6.11.25. The verse says, O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant, so that my mind may always think of the transcendental attributes, my words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in the loving service of your Lordship. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, this verse gives the sum and substance of devotional life. One must first become a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Das anudas anudas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised, and he's shown by his own example, that a living entity should always desire to be servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis, gopi bhartu para kamalayor das anudas. So the spiritual compassion experienced by those devotees of Krishna, devotees of God, differs from pious acts or philanthropy or just some empathy that one might have wanting to help other people. There are those who are pious, who follow some rules, they follow religious principles, but it's often for personal gain or for extended personal gain. In the Vedic culture, we see practices of karma yoga, where one follows the rules and regulations of Vedic life and lives very piously and serves God. But the idea is to go to heaven, basically, to gain some higher birth in the next lifetime. And in the Western world, we see those in the mode of goodness. They may perform welfare work. And the idea is, though, that there will be gain for everyone. There was a philosophy called utilitarianism. John Stuart Mills, I think, was one of the founders of that. And he had this quote, he talked about the greatest good for the greatest number. In other words, we should all do what is going to be the best for everybody. Now, that sounds very good, but how do you achieve that? How do we bring about this greatest good? Through politics, through philanthropy, through science? The missing part is that we bring about the greatest good for the greatest number by giving the greatest number of people Krishna consciousness, real spiritual life. That is the way that we actually help humanity. So the devotee follows principles, follows the laws of the land of society, but also acts for the satisfaction of Krishna. And that automatically brings about the highest welfare to everyone. So how does that work? How is it that by serving God, does that automatically serve humanity? Well, this example is given in this purport where Srila Prabhupada says, just as the leaves and branches of a tree are not separate from the tree, he knows very well that pouring water on the root of the tree, the water will be distributed to all the leaves and branches. So in the, I think it's from Bhagavad Gita 241. It says, pouring water on the root of the tree energizes the trunk, branches, and twigs and everything else, and is supplying food to the stomach, enlivens the senses and limbs of the body. Simply worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead through devotional service automatically satisfies the demigods who are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality. So the idea here about the demigods is you don't need to separately worship the demigods who are in charge of all the affairs of material nature, Indra bringing the rain, et cetera, et cetera. It's not necessary. If you satisfy Krishna, the complete whole, everyone is satisfied. And Prabhupada says in the purport, by watering the root of a tree, one automatically distributes water to the leaves and branches. So by acting in Krishna consciousness, one can render the highest service to everyone, namely self, family, society, country, humanity, etc. If Krishna is satisfied by one's actions, then everyone will be satisfied. So as being described here, the pure devotees are not distressed and their mind is always calm. And Prabhupada mentions in his purport that the mind and the senses are controlled. And when the mind and the senses are controlled, the intelligence is controlled, one's mind becomes fixed on God, fixed on Krishna. So that's not so easy for us to actually do, is it? For us, for our minds to be completely calm, to be completely fixed, for the senses to not be all over the place. In fact, Arjuna says to Krishna, to control the mind is more difficult than to control the raging wind. So even Arjuna, great devotee of the Lord, expressed the same thing. Very, very difficult to do. Part of the reason it's difficult to do is that we all have a lifetime and many lifetimes of negative material experiences. We are conditioned. We're conditioned in this material world to think a certain way, for our consciousness to be occupied in a certain way. So to make this shift from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness, as is being described here, where Srila Prabhupada says that the pure devotee, is everything he does is thinking about Krishna, everything he does is for Krishna, everything he eats is offered to Krishna, to really be in this frame of mind is not so easy. It takes some practice, it takes some work, because we have experienced these mental disturbances through many, many lifetimes. And we could kind of categorize the problems that we bring into this world, in this life, in two ways. First are those things that we call anartas. Anartas are unwanted habits from past conditioning. Just like many of us, when we came to Krishna consciousness, and we learned about the four regular principles, our conditioned nature was, what's wrong with these things? What's wrong with intoxication? Et cetera. So our conditioned nature is to have so many habits that are ingrained, not just from this lifetime, but from many lifetimes. And we also have what's called samskaras, or unwanted impressions in the mind. Our consciousness is filled with so many associations with all types of material things that they kind of get stuck in your mind. Think about all the thoughts in the past. Think about all these sort of mundane material experiences, all the songs, movies, television, everything that we experience, they kind of stick in the mind, don't they? They're there. Even if we're not very interested in them, we say, I'm interested in spiritual life. They're still there. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Charivadharma said there are two types of these. One are called prakthana, those impressions from past lifetimes, and those which are adhunika, those from the present life. So all that's there sort of working against us. So we need to become free of these material conditionings, because these material conditionings divert us from spiritual life. They divert us from understanding the real self as the spirit soul, the eternal servant of God, of Krishna, and the process of bhakti yoga. So to purify the mind and to gradually, not all at once, but gradually rid ourselves of these samskaras and anartas, we have a process. And that process is called sadhana bhakti, devotional service. This particularly beginning with the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna. And of course, the most powerful process in this age of Kali is given to us, exemplified by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra purifies the mind, cleanses the heart of all misgivings, which are these anartas and samskaras and all of these conditioned impressions that we bring with us. So, as the mind becomes calmed, the senses come under control, what happens is the real self emerges. It's a developmental process. Not all at once, but gradually, the real self becomes more and more prominent. And that real self is, of course, eternal servant of Krishna, Jivara Srubhaya Krishnara Nichidas. Eternal servant of Krishna. That emerges by the process of bhakti, this process of chanting Hare Krishna. And as that happens, another thing happens is not only do we become interested in like saving ourselves, but we become interested in others. So this isn't a save yourself movement, really. It's really about compassion for others. Of course, save yourself, yes. But that's almost automatic. That'll happen. We don't have to worry about saving ourselves. We'll be fine. You serve Krishna and Krishna will take care of us. We are in good hands. We are in safe hands with Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. But we need to develop compassion, and that compassion for others, to help others, will develop through the process of sadhana. So how do we develop that compassion? First, by knowledge. We have to hear about Krishna. And we hear the examples of the great devotees like Srila Prabhupada, Prahlad Maharaj in the Bhagavatam, Sanatana Goswami, who I'm going to mention. And the practice of bhakti, of hearing and chanting, that is very deeply purifying and brings out the natural spiritual aspect of the soul. Also, as we try to help others through practice, that attempt, even just the attempt, helps us develop compassion. I was reading something the other day about children developing empathy and something they call prosocial behavior, and I'm a developmental psychologist, so I'll try not to get into this too much. But basically, they found research that much of this is learned. Of course, we all come in this world with different propensities, different experiences, different karma, but there's also a learned component. And they find that when children practice being compassionate, they learn to become compassionate. When they witness the example of parents, teachers, others doing compassionate acts, then they learn that. So they learn from experience, they learn from seeing, they learn from hearing about it. And so in the same way, we develop our compassion by trying to become compassionate, like through practice. It's like, sometimes I think we're sort of like devotees in practice. You know, we're not great pure devotees, but we're practicing to become pure devotees. So that will happen. And as we advance in spiritual life, we become more free of those material desires. The heart becomes soft as we develop love of Krishna. And we become less self-absorbed and more absorbed in serving Krishna and serving all of Krishna's part and parcel living entities. And in fact, you could even say that the absorption in our own issues and problems is one thing that prevents us from acting with compassion for others, right? In other words, sometimes we get so absorbed in our own issues and problems and what's done it for me and what's happening with me that we can forget. We can forget to be compassionate and kind and caring with those all around us, which is the hallmark of a devotee. And we see, this isn't just a theoretical thing, we see the examples of the great devotees like Prahlad Maharaj and the Srimad Bhagavatam, about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and those devotees. We see the example in our own lifetime of Srila Prabhupada, the compassion that he had. Of course, you know, there can be compassion, sort of abstract sense of, you know, I feel compassionate that people aren't, you know, don't know the absolute truth and I want to give them the truth. But there's also a very personal, heart-based compassion. I was just trying to think of some story, and the first one that came to my mind, and I don't even know I have this right because I just you sort of thought of this as a something that I think exemplified Srila Prabhupada. And the story has been told many times. I think Jayapataka Swami told it. He was there. That Prabhupada was up on the roof or something in Mayapur. And there was a feast or something, you know, prasadam. And, you know, and the devotees went through their plates in the garbage, the dumpster, garbage can. And there were local children, very poor children, who were going through the garbage to get the garbage, to find, you know, to get something to eat. And Srila Prabhupada looked at them and he felt such compassion in his heart. He actually was in tears. There were tears coming in his eyes. And that's when he actually started the Mayapur Food for Life program. And he said, I hope I get the figure right. He said, no one within, how many miles? Does anyone know the story? 10 miles. No one within 10 miles should be hungry. You know, an institute, and even today, thousands and thousands of people come to Mayapur and they get free plates of prasadam. So, in other words, it wasn't just an abstract thing for people's souls. It was also a experience of the heart and the mind, you know, that here are living entities who are suffering this material world. What are we going to do about it? You know, give prasadam. Not only, of course, and prasadam is not simply a material thing of feeding someone. It's also purified food offered to Krishna that gives great spiritual benefit as well. So both things are there. Okay? And I'm going to end with a little, I don't know if you call it a story, it's a narration about Sanatana Goswami. Where Sanatana Goswami, one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, direct disciple, instructed personally by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in his older days, whatever, Sanatana Goswami, at one point he was wandering around the villages around Vrindavan. And this is from the Bhakti Ratnakara by Narahari Das, and I believe that it was translated or produced by our own Spundarik Vijayaniti here. Spundarik has something to do with, I think, you know, producing or having translated the Bhakti Ratnakara, right? Anyway. So it's on good authority. Here he goes. After staying in one town, when Sanatana would go to another town, the people would follow behind him. Whether a young boy or old man, whoever it was, all would lose their patience and cry as the Goswami would leave. Sanatana Goswami himself would shed tears as he solaced them and sent them back to their homes. Only after they stopped crying and returned to their houses would Sanatana leave for the next village. As Sanatana approached the next village, the people would watch him coming from a distance. Whether young or old, man or woman, everyone said, "Here is Sanatana." The Vrajavasis displayed wonderful affection. The villagers could not sit in one place, but went to welcome Sanatana, just as a poor man experiences unlimited happiness if he suddenly obtains a valuable jewel. So the Vrajavasis felt unlimited happiness by seeing Sanatana. The old and very old men and women all treated Sanatana as their own son. Whoever came rushing to welcome him would embrace him, take his hand, lead him along. The villagers would jubilantly have him sit under a sacred tree, and everyone would sit around him, and they would bring so many things to eat. Sanatana affectionately inquired from each person about their well-being. So now, a vision. Sanatana Goswami, of course, is the Manjari Gopi, you know, greatest scholar, greatest devotee, one of the, you know, he's like our epitome in Vaishnava history of, you know, of the ideal, incredibly advanced devotee. So he doesn't just open up Bhagavad Gita and start preaching at him. What does he do? Sanatana affectionately inquired from each person about their well-being. He inquired about how many children, daughters, and sons they had, whether they were married, where they were married, and what were their names, and what was their education. He asked how many cows and bulls one had. This is 500 years ago, you know. How their agriculture was, how much grain they produced, and what was their daily routine. He also asked them how their health was and what was the state of their mind. Hearing these inquiries, everyone felt happy. Gradually, each one of them answered his questions. When Sanatana heard someone's distress, he also felt distressed. By Sanatana's solace, they felt relief from their distressed condition. In this way, they passed the whole night. By seeing others happy, Sanatana would also become happy. As described previously, when he would leave the village, everyone would cry in agitation. Who can describe the affectionate dealings of Sanatana Goswami? He would solace everyone in various ways. The people would follow Sanatana Goswami for some distance until he would give his own vow to make them return to their homes. So this is just a little snapshot, a little synopsis of the life of a great, great devotee like Sanatana Goswami and his care and his compassion for people. Of course, these are the Vrajavasis. They're all devotees. You know, the whole context is around devotional service. It's not mundane. It's all, you know, it's all in terms of helping people develop their spiritual lives. And of course, he gave so much spiritual knowledge. But he also connected with each person personally, concerned about their life, their welfare. And in this way, he became so dear to everybody in the area. And this is what I think this verse is talking about, Bhagavad Gita. I think this is what's the word? Vishuddha Atma, one who is a great soul and one who is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. So we're so fortunate that we have our Vaishnavacharyas who give us the example. We have Srila Prabhupada just recently who gave his wonderful example, and so many devotees showing us how to become advanced in God consciousness and Krishna consciousness, how to actually experience compassion for all living entities and how to display that compassion to everyone. Okay, so I think we're out of time. So thank you all very much for your time and patience. Very quiet, wonderful audience. Thank you. We may have a couple of minutes if there are any other comments or questions that anyone might have. Yes, Yamaraj.
Haribo, thank you for the nice class about compassion. Bhakti Tirtha Swami instructed his disciples and through the his books, The Beggar Series. So we wouldn't develop an elitist type of attitude to go visit some of these homeless shelters. Like, for example, in Gainesville, they have the Grace Market, the Winn-Dixie place where they have deformed people there. Sometimes I drop them off. And so, you know, going to hospitals, nursing homes, so we can, you know, like you were saying, and like the great charity did, talk to the people and develop some kind of relationship with them so you can experience what they're experiencing, you know, in their life.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah, I was just thinking, of course, there's this line between mundane welfare, mundane compassion, and spiritual compassion, you know, but it is a fact that If a person knows, not that you make a display, but you actually are interested in a person, care about the person, then they're going to listen. You become their friend. And then when you talk to them about spiritual life and give some spiritual information, they're much more likely to listen, aren't they? Because they see you as a friend, someone who cares about, and perhaps because you have such good qualities, they want to know, how did you get those? What's the basis of those? You know, and they might say, I want to be like that. So what's the spiritual background and the basis of how these people have such wonderful, kind qualities? Yeah. Leland?
I actually just want to get a verse number that you mentioned, but I could not write it down.
Today's verse?
You said, a devotee does not think others are inferior. He is the servant of everyone. Prabhupada considered himself servant of everyone. This is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, servant of the servant. Prabhupada writes in the purport that this is the sum and substance of devotional service.
Okay, that is Srimad Bhagavatam 6, 11, 25.
Thank you.
That's verse and purport. Yeah. Right. Thank you. Yeah, I just ran across this one. It's a very good one. I had forgotten about it. Yeah. I was thinking of something else, what you said. Anyway, go ahead. Any other thoughts, your comments, your questions? Right. Okay. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.